Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. Are you ready for a snowstorm of global proportion? Yes, over 6 feet of snow has just hit your podcast experience. And here he is, Nicholas Snow.
Once a month for two decades, a neighborhood Mexican restaurant in the Silver Lake area of Los Angeles, on a nondescript corner, was transformed into a beloved destination for music, dance, fashion, and performance art. Much more than just a dance club, Drag Strip 66 was an irreverent and decadent celebration of self-expression, community, and imagination that invited everyone to participate in its misfit-inspired magic. In today's episode, we follow the journey of the film Drag Strip 66, the frockumentary. And first up, an actor you'll know from virtually every John Waters film, Ming Stoll.
Drag Strip was a club in the sense that people felt that they belonged. And it was in my neighborhood. I didn't have to travel to it. It was, you know, it made my neighborhood a great neighborhood. There was always a great variety of people there that were people in drag, there were people out of drag, there were straight people. There were very few straight men, but there were plenty of women who went there. I'm very much looking forward to this film. I can't wait to see some of the archival footage, and I'm really excited and pleased that you're making this movie. I think it's an important document, and it's part of history, part of everybody's history. It's not just part of gay history, it's part of everybody's history. So, in that sense, especially, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
The snowstorm continues after this.
Spotlight on Palm Springs.
Come to Lulu, the award-winning California bistro. Fabulous breakfast, a luscious three-course Sunday brunch, scrumptious dinners serving fresh fish, perfect steaks, pizzas, salads, and more. Something for everyone. A three-course special to savor from $15.99. The best all-day and night happy hour. There's always a party at Lulu in the heart of downtown Palm Springs on South Palm Canyon and Arenas.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Snow. Many of you know that I am HIV positive. I'm living powerfully with HIV because I benefit from the services of the Desert AIDS Project in Palm Springs, California. And I'm very happy to bring you this news from another grateful client of Desert AIDS Project.
I'm more proactive with my health now, I think, than I was before. And I think that's because there's other people that are being proactive with me. You know, there's people that are interested and concerned about it.
A lot of services that are very difficult to access to HIV-infected patients are gathered within one roof. We do have access to substance abuse counselor, mental health services, psychiatrists. We have dental service programs. We have nutritional programs, housing, case management. Very unique in the nation that all the programs, including medical services, are administered within one facility.
Coming here, I felt just an amazing amount of love from Desert AIDS Project. They are people who just care in the community, people who want to put a hand out and say, let me hold yours. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
For more information, visit desertaidsproject.org.
And now, on with the show. He's a regular contributor to the Huffington Post and to media outlets throughout the world. He's an author, singer, songwriter, actor, and activist, and the executive producer and host of NicholasSnow.tv. He has created and continues to do so a snowstorm of global proportions dedicated to connecting the circuitry of humanity. And now, drifting into the studio and your life once again, Nicholas Snow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm really excited about this particular episode. I personally never went to Drag Strip 66. It seemed a bit subversive to me, even though at the time I was the Tinseltown queer on three public access TV stations in Los Angeles. So why anything would seem subversive to me, I have no idea. At any rate, without further ado, I'm going to bring on the co-directors of Drag Strip 66, the Frockumentary. First of all, DJ Paul V. Hey, welcome to the show, Paul.
Hi there, Nicholas. And I remember you well as the Tinseltown queer.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you for that. And also, co-director Phil Scanlon. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Thanks, Nicholas. Well, it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, listen, I'm so excited. You know, my cool factor will go up by having you on because, you know, I don't even have to tell you why. You already know why. So let me just start with Paul, because Paul, you were the co-founder of Drag Strip 66 with Mr. Dan. So take us back to that moment in time, and actually in the year or months leading up to it. How did the idea come about?
Well, Mr. Dan and I are best friends. We met first in Boston, where I was from Boston. He had just moved there. We met there at one of the clubs I was DJing at, and we became really great friends. I moved to LA. He came to LA about 8 months later, and we had wanted to do some club things. And so the genesis of Drag Strip 66 was something called Mystery Date, which was a weekly themed club where every week the theme was something related to TV culture. So we did like a David Cassidy night, a Flintstones night. It was basically like all like TV land and a nightclub, and we would play videos and do like trivia, and we would go to like Pick and Save and buy like cheap toys and put our logo on it and give them away as prizes. And it was so much work, and we made a lot of great friends, but we never really got a crowd. So we sort of gave up on that. And a few years later, we did some other events that again, nice little turnout, but never really, you know, caught to the point where, you know, you could count on a great crowd coming in every week. And so we kind of put everything aside and said, let's try to conceptualize something that we can do maybe monthly, where we have much more time to prep, you know, how we're going to decorate the club, how we're going to make the minutiae, you know, around the stage, you know, all the things related to the themes, so we could have props and we could have sights and visuals and things like that. And Dan thought, you know, well, what if it was like a drag thing? What if like the themes were to inspire people to dress in drag? So that was the concept. And he came up with the name. He sort of mashed up Sunset. What is it? It's a TV show. I can't even remember now. 77.
Laughing?
No. So, well, yeah, oh, right. No.
77. Sunset
Route 66.
Strip. No, it's Route 66 and 77 Sunset Strip. So that was kind of how we did it. And then we. We found the venue, which was Rodolfo's on the corner of Riverside Adventure in Silver Lake, which is a Mexican restaurant. And they had a few kind of cool alternative underground events there. And they said, sure, we'll put you on the second Saturday. And so we launched. And interestingly enough, it's kind of funny how things go full circle. Because we launched the week that Bill Clinton had got sworn in, we sort of did this impromptu Hillary Clinton Tipper Gore lookalike contest. Nobody really knew that we were doing that because we didn't really make a flyer saying that. We just kind of put the word out to our friends. So we didn't really have any lookalikes, but it did pretty well. We got a great turnout. Rewinding a little bit before we started, and this is God's honest truth, Mr. Dan and I said, we're going to give it 6 months, and if it doesn't seem like people get it or want to come or we're not getting a crowd, we're never going to do another event again. And you know what? By the 6th month, it was packed to the gills, and it stayed that way forever. It stayed that way for the entirety of its run. So knock on wood, I guess.
Wow. Now, Phil, let me just ask you, without Paul explaining first, when were you aware of Drag Strip 66, when it was going on? How did you first learn of it, and how do you know Paul?
Well, my friends took me to Drag Strip when I first arrived in L.A., and I have to say, based on your intro, Nicholas, you are the reason that we're making this movie, because you were in this town, and you had heard of Drag Strip 66, but you never had the chance to experience it. So Paul and I want to make this movie for people like you who have heard of it, always wondered what it was like, and our hope is to emulate the experience of being in the club, and we have plenty of footage and interviews that we hope will hopefully connect the larger audience with the vibe and the philosophy of what this club was, because it was really unlike anything else. I don't think the term nightclub describes it very well. But to get back to your initial question, I was a fan of Drag Strip. I can remember the first time I walked in the door, I was completely enthralled by it. I couldn't explain it. I didn't know what was going on. But I immediately felt like this is the place where I belong. This feels like home to me. There was so much going on. There was a stage show and fantastic mashup of music. There was a patio where people were socializing. Of course, people were dressed up in fantastic costumes that I'd never seen before. And everybody was, you know, connecting with the joy of life, I guess. The people were there to really have fun and to socialize. And as we continue to conduct interviews of the patrons and the staff and people who experienced it, they all kind of resonate with that same vibration of, you know, it was a highly social event where I met some fantastic people and they've remained my friends, boyfriends, you know, or part of my community since that time. So people really connected with what Paul and Mr. Dan had created. And it attracted a lot of like-minded individuals who really, you know, wanted to express themselves and celebrate life.
Well, wait, I just want to jump in, Nicholas, because I never met Phil in the 20 years of doing the club. Phil was a regular, but we never got to meet. And Phil heard that we were going to be ending the club on the 20th anniversary. So he came to me and said, you know, this club is important to me and I think you need to document it. And can we film the finale? Can we have a crew? And so that's how this all came together. And I feel like I've known Phil my whole life. That's what that does. Aside from, you know, trying to get the raised for the movie, it's just, you know, it's one of those things where the connection that people made with each other were sort of instant. You know, people felt like, I feel like I know you. I feel like, and if I don't know you, I want to know you. And that was going on all night at Drag Strip. That was kind of the neat thing about it.
Paul, I know you launched in 1993. What month?
Interestingly, if you're into numerology, it was on 1/9/93. Second
okay,
Saturday.
Okay, so you launched in January.
Yep.
Well, the reason I mention that is because there were some other subversive things going on at the time. So my friend who you know, Douglas Long, had the Fresca Vinyl show on public access.
Yeah.
And of course, Desert Age, excuse me, I'm in Palm Springs, so I mentioned Desert AIDS Project, but AIDS Project Los Angeles had two big parties at the Playboy Mansion, featuring drag superstars from the community from both coasts. And there's people that weren't necessarily widely famous, but people that all of us on the air today will know are the Fabulous Phyllis. Was right. Very big at the time for drag, and Karen Dior,
right?
All these people. So just hearing that the documentary is happening takes me back in time, and of course I launched my own show, Tinseltown's Queer, in April of '93, and it ran for 7 years. So I totally appreciate the historic relevance of everything that you guys are up to.
Well, and I just, you know, the thing about it is that we, obviously this was very infantile internet at the time. way before social media, and we never advertised. We did take out a couple of ads in Spunk magazine. I don't know if you remember Spunk magazine.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. So we every once in a while we would throw an ad in there, but in terms of, like, you know, the LA Weekly or sort of mainstream advertising, it was solely a word of mouth phenomenon. And you just think about now compared to now, like, how impossible that is. Even something that says, "Oh, we're underground, a secret location." There's no such thing as a secret. And we were, you know, at the time, the other kind of interesting cultural relevance historically, still in LA at that time, was still considered kind of a sketchy, you know, somewhat dangerous neighborhood. And we were on the corner, like I said, of Riverside and Fletcher, which is right by the 5 freeway. And it was, you know, it was certainly kind of off the beaten path. So the point is that for people to go, you had to do a little work. You had to have friends that knew about it. And that's what happened every month, is that it was like a snowball, because if two people went in January, they had to bring two more people in February. And then those two people brought two more people. And then it, you know what I mean? Like, it really just was like a blob. And it just grew from people talking about it and having so much fun. And, you know, those are the things you can't even buy with advertising. You know, if something hits and people love something and they believe in it, you can't get better advertising than someone who can share that excitement about it and the energy about it.
And certainly, I think it was the patrons who brought their energy and creativity, and the sharing of that creativity is what made it so special for everybody. It was as if Brigadoon landed in the barrio once a month, because this restaurant was transformed once a month. And then the next day it was a restaurant again. But that night, all kinds of glamorous, fantastic, fabulous, fun people in terrific costumes descended in this one location and had an amazing time. But there was almost no record of it the following morning.
Right.
And that was just part of the magic. And, you know, magic is a term we keep hearing too. So, you know, it was very highly, it's almost old fashioned in the way that it was highly social, because people knew that it was happening once a month and it was on everyone's calendar. And everybody knew that they were going to be running into people that they really liked and cared about. And everybody stepped up, you know, everybody, you know, the themes of these, you know, monthly were designed to bring out people's creativity, and they were challenging. And I know Paul can list a number of themes. They were all fantastic, but everybody rose to the occasion. I mean, it was part challenge, part provocation, and the, you know, the range of creativity that they brought to this was amazing. So it was not something that the club produced as much as what the club goers were bringing. You know, Dan put on this fantastic show every month.
He's kind of the interesting,
wrote original lyrics and, you know, designed these shows that were always very topical and political. And, you know, but everybody was part of the stage show. It was all a stage.
That's also, you know, something.
I was just going to say, as you mentioned this, I think I might have gone to Drag Strip 66 once. It's coming back to me. I wouldn't stake my life on it. But talk about some of the themes, Paul.
The key themes was making them instantaneously recognizable, but broad, you know. So we did things, we would do sort of movie mashups like Florence of Arabia or Victor Victoria's Secret, 20,000 Queens under the 1,000 Queens under the Sea, Carnival Knowledge. We did TV stuff, you know, we did Queen Acres. We did a lot of stuff for Divine and John Waters. We did sports things like jocks and frocks. That was a hot, because then, you know, we had a lot of guys who figured out that they could do drag, and it didn't mean they have to dress like a woman. It just meant they weren't going to wear their t-shirt and jeans. They were going to throw on something to change their look up. So jocks and frocks night, oh my God, every month, like guys in jock straps with like football pads, you know, those big shoulder pads on, and the black line under the eye, like they're playing football. Like that was what was great, was that it allowed everybody to figure out their own version back. And people learned, like I said, very quickly, it isn't just, oh, male dresses like female or male tries to be girl. It really was just make a statement, and whatever your statement is, it's perfect. There's no wrong statement. Every statement you make is perfect.
Well, let's hear from some of the patrons who have a few ideas and thoughts about the upcoming film that is Dragstrip 66, the Frockumentary. I say upcoming, this podcast will live forever. And right now, at this moment, the production team is diligently raising money. But throughout the life of a film, until it actually hits your screen, there's opportunities to donate. We'll give you website contact information and all sorts of stuff later in the show. But let's check in with those patrons.
I think what made Dragstrip so special was that everyone felt welcome.
I was a huge fan of Dragstrip every time I attended. It was such an important cultural movement that we should really honor that. And it would be great to see that in reflections of donations.
Dragstrip was a pivotal time in my life growing up and becoming an adult gay man. And it was part of building my network, building my community.
I donated to this project because I was just very grateful to have Dragstrip, to be honest with you. I was very grateful. It was something that was very important to my life in the 1990s. All the whole club scene in the 1990s was very important to me. And I was really happy to hear there's a documentary being made about it, because I wanted to see that. I want to see that. That's part of my life.
For me, giving to the Kickstarter campaign was giving back to our whole community.
Paul V and I would like to, from the bottom of our hearts, thank you so much for your love and support this year.
Even though we're in LA, there's kind of boxes that you're supposed to fit in, but Dragstrip was the only place you didn't need to fit in a box. In fact, it was encouraged that you didn't.
Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. The snowstorm continues after this.
New designer furnishings, sparkling cocktail rings, vintage jeans and shirts for moms, teens, boys, and flirts. Rugs and stylish bedding design your wedding. Shiny knickknacks and glam Hollywood throwbacks. You'll find it here at Revivals. Voted best of the Valley thrift stores. Now with even more new treasures, plus one-of-a-kind consignment and estate items. Fashion, accessories, furniture, it's all in store at Revivals. Find it here. Visit us at revivalstores.com to find a Revivals store near you.
Hey folks, mark your calendars for early November, because it's time for Greater Palm Springs Pride, Southern California's popular and longest-running LGBT festival in the Coachella Valley. Palm Canyon Drive is closed to traffic and transformed into a vibrant, pedestrian-friendly Pride festival unique to Southern California. Palm Springs Pride is also one of the sponsoring organizations of the annual Harvey Milk Diversity Breakfast, which takes place every year in May. Visit pspride.org.
The LGBT Community Center of the Desert is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enriching the lives of the LGBT community in the Valley through health and wellness, social and educational programs. The center advances its mission through a clinical counseling and internship program, senior programming, youth anti-bullying and suicide prevention support programs, a growing volunteer program, and signature special events in the community for its members and allies. For more information on the LGBT Community Center, visit them on the web at thecenterps.org.
This may be the only podcast on the air that is continually mobbed by paparazzi, and I think I have to blame that on my guest today, DJ Paul V and Phil Scanlon. Hey, Phil, I'd love to know, now I know you've been involved in the world of film for a long time, so why don't you tell me and my listeners a bit about your connection to film and the film industry?
Oh, sure. Well, like many young people, I arrived in LA with dreams of getting into the film industry. I got my first job at the American Society of Cinematographers, and I quickly moved to the American Film Institute, where I programmed the Harold Lloyd seminars. So I was there for 5 years, and I had an incredible experience because I got to meet great filmmakers, producers, actors, and actresses. I would invite them to appear before the fellows, so we had a chance to discuss their latest film, but I also got a chance to speak with them leading up to their appearances, and I was able to maintain relationships with publicists and studios, which allowed me to become a film festival consultant for many years. I actually kind of aged out of that kind of work because I, you know, if you work at festivals, you start to lose sleep, and you find that everything you eat comes on a cracker, and it was really a young man's game. So I'm still in the event business, but not at all involved in festivals. But my background in festivals gave me an appreciation for, you know, narrative films and documentaries that work with audiences. And, you know, my sixth sense was telling me that there was an amazing story here, and an important story that needs to be told. Not enough people know about Drag Strip. It was truly underground, as we've mentioned. And I think if people, you know, can connect with the philosophy of the club, then my hope and Paul's hope as well is that people across the globe might be inspired to do something similar wherever they happen to live. So, you know, I would love to see, you know, similar events occurring in, you know, India and the Middle East and, you know, rural areas, because really what Mr. Dan and Paul did was kismet in a sense. They mixed a lot of elements that came together in a really beautiful and exciting way. So with music and the location, you know, and the people that they attracted, you know, there's a whole world of people with the same philosophy of life and a joy of living. And it doesn't matter if you're gay, straight, old, young, what age you are. And Drag Strip attracted all kinds of people. You know, it was age indeterminate, you know, sexual preference indeterminate. Everybody who walked through the doors was supported and encouraged and loved, and everybody felt that, which allowed everybody to take a risk and dress up. You know, everybody was embraced there. And I think that's why, you know, people kept returning and people kept, just as my friends did before I moved here, they spoke about Drag Strip 66. And it was the event that they told me that I had to attend. And I finally did. And of course, I connected with it immediately. And I did the same thing with my friends. You know, I would plan my months around this event and invite friends from out of town to visit me when it was occurring, because I was proud of it. And I still am. And I feel so fortunate that I was able to experience it.
I love it. Go ahead, Paul.
No, I'm just going to add quickly that I remember one month, there's about five people from Sweden who showed up, and you know, Mr. Dan got to talk to them there, and you know, we were kind of like, how do you even know about Drag Strip? And they said, oh, everybody knows about Drag Strip. And we made sure that we planned our flights so that we could be in LA the weekend that you were happening. So that kind of floored us, you know?
We did an interview with a gent named Peter Alexander, who had, he had friends who were fishermen in Alaska, like straight dudes who lived in the outdoors. They came down and dressed up in dresses and went to drag strip and had the time of their lives, and they're still talking about it today. So it's another perfect example of people not knowing what the experience is, but once they're immersed in it, it's somewhat life-changing.
You know, it's sort of like Halloween throughout the year in a way.
And Christmas time. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Nicholas, you're on the, that's the thing is that, you know, you think about how huge like the West Hollywood Halloween celebration is, or just how people love Halloween, and the larger kind of psychological angle to it is once a year, people get to not be themselves. They get to do anything, you know, as a character, as a, in a costume, they get to completely leave their body in a sense and inhabit the role or the persona of something else and not be judged because it's Halloween. Well, we did that every month. Every month, people got to step out of their normal role, inhabit another role, create a persona, create an energy. And so, yeah, it was like Halloween every second Saturday of the month.
Wow. Paul, be on deck in a moment. I have a question for Phil first, but then Paul, I'm going to come to you and I'm going to ask for specific celebrity anecdotes that stand out in your mind. But sure. Phil, why don't you give out all of the contact information? I'm going to start. You have a website, which is DS66TheFrockumentary.com. That's DS for drag strips, the number 66, TheFrockumentary.com. Frockumentary is documentary with a FR instead of the D. DS66TheFrockumentary.com. What other social media addresses do you have to share, if any?
Well, I can give you the Tube Start page. I can also give you the our Facebook page.
The Facebook page is great. And whatever Tubes, I don't even know what Tube Start is, but so you can give it all out.
Okay. So Tube Stop is the donation page, and it's a new crowdfunding site. So hold on 1 second and I'll pull it up for you. And Paul, you can jump in if you want to.
Yeah, I'll jump in. I'm the detail queen. It's tubestart.com. That's TubeStart.com. And we're on the front page. We're a featured project. And the website that you mentioned, it is DS66TheFrockumentary.com, but it's FrockU.
Oh, you're right. Exactly. FrockU. You got it.
Yeah.
Frockumentary.com.
You can either do DS66TheFrockumentary.com or spell it all out as DragStrip66TheFrockumentary.com. And Facebook is just facebook.com/dragstrip66.
That's the easiest way for everyone to find you. Go ahead.
The web page is a great place to start because it includes our pitch reel along with other clips, but also some great candid photos that were taken throughout the history of the club. There's also lots of articles, media hits, etc. So there's you can spend a lot of time on the page and it will lead you to different places, but it should give you a little taste of the club experience.
Fantastic. I'm going to take another break and then come back and get those celebrity moments from Paul. But also at DS66TheFrockumentary.com is a list of their theme nights. I think it's fascinating. So just to throw out a few, Vegas in Space, Hot Pants Sexplosion, Drag Strip 666, loving that. Muscle Beach Bikini Party, Gypsies, Waifs, and Thieves, Naughty Nurses. The list goes on and on and on. DS66TheFrockumentary.com.
The snowstorm continues after this.
In Greater Palm Springs since 1979, the Desert Business Association has promoted and supported LGBT and allied businesses and professionals who join together for business promotion, economic development, educational, and humanitarian purposes. Their vision is to connect, promote, and build prosperity by embracing all members of the community to make a positive difference. They have many events every month. Find them at desertbusinessassociation.com.
I need to start wearing my sunglasses because I can never see after those paparazzi finish. So I promised some celebrity anecdotes, and I could have gone through this whole list of names that you've described, but I want to hear it from the perspective of, oh my God, you heard so-and-so was in the club.
Well, here's the sad part for me. Being the DJ, I was always trapped in the DJ booth, so couldn't really get amongst everybody or see people the way that even that our patrons did. But it kind of runs the gamut from everyone from like Nina Hagen and Perry Farrell and Marilyn Manson to Anderson Cooper and Pamela Anderson and Pamela Anderson Cooper. Pedro Almodovar, Holly Woodlawn, Lance Loud, Wilson Cruz, Adam Lambert,
Ian McKellen,
Alan Cumming. They came together, by the way. Roseanne, Drew Barrymore.
Drew Barrymore's
probably, yeah. We actually made a little video about the Drew Barrymore experience there because she knew who Sharon Needles was, who was worked our door, but was also one of our performers. I will clarify, this is the original Sharon Needles, from not the one that ended up on RuPaul's Drag Race, two totally different people. And our Sharon had the name first. Thank you very much. But she came, and there was something, what we put in the video is that, you know, it was probably in Spunk. They had put Sharon Needles' face on Drew Barrymore's photo. I think Drew Barrymore saw it. And when she came, she kept screaming out, Sharon Needles, Sharon Needles, and hung out with her backstage for about an hour, sitting on Sharon Needles' lap, just talking.
Maybe you should tell Nicholas about Karen Black as well.
Oh, yeah, Karen Black. The second drag strip ever, February 93, was the Karen Black Valentine Ball. So it was for Karen Black, but also for Karen Valentine. Who, you know, listeners will have to Google who she is. She was on Room 222. But anyway,
wasn't she in Love American Style?
Yes.
I was going to say that, and I'm like, I was almost going to say it too, and I'm like, I already totally dated myself with Room 222. But so what we did was, you know, this is what I was saying about, you know, the visuals. What we would do is we would just do Xeroxes, make giant Xeroxes of like photos, and we would hand watercolor them and put them up around the club. I did something called Karen Vision, where I took just the moments from Trilogy, which was, you know, a very famous TV movie of the week, where Karen Black gets attacked by a like a Zuni fetish doll. Like it literally comes to life and it starts like chasing her around and stabbing her. So I literally, Nicholas, and this is like 2 hours, I made a 6-hour loop of just these moments from the doll attacking her. And we made this giant foam core wall and cut a circle in it. And above it, it said Karen Vision. And when you put your head through the hole, you could see and hear playing on a little TV. Well, anyway, so I don't know, it was about 11:30 and Karen Black showed up and we were all just like floored. And again, you have to remember this was only the second event ever, and her hairdresser, I guess, had heard about it and took her, and she didn't really know what to make of it. And I remember at the door, she was talking to Mr. Dan, and she She literally said, I don't really understand, why me? And Mr. Dan, of course, without blinking, said, honey, why not? And she kind of got it at that point. You know, and that's what we, that's, I just want to add, you know, what we did with our themes is we really celebrated every sort of layer of pop culture. We, so many things influenced us, from television and movies and from art and books. And so we tried to just sort of throw it all in a blender and spit it out in a way, because we knew other people from our sort of age group would feel a connection to these things too. And, you know, Karen Black was kind of, she certainly was not like a hugely actress, but for people like in our circles, it was like, oh my God, Karen Black is here. So we were hitting on the themes and the personas and the people of pop culture that our sort of circle of friends related to. We never really did really mainstream acknowledgement stuff. You know, it was all kind of under the radar a little bit.
Wow. I'd like to, at this point, ask each of you, starting with Phil, is there anything you'd really like to say about this project that we haven't addressed yet? Take it away, Phil.
Thank you. There's actually a few things. I would love to talk a little bit about the music, because Paul did an amazing job of mashing up so many styles. And, I think the reason that Paul and I never met is because I spent most of the time at the club on the dance floor, moshing it up with drag queens or slow dancing or whatever it was that Paul would decide to play. But I think what I really want to share is that this story is wider and deeper than just a nightclub that occurred for 20 years in a corner of Silver Lake. I think what the club did was answer a very basic human need for connection and self-expression and love in the communal sense of, you know, being part of a community of people who were supported and understood you even without knowing your name or where you came from. So, you know, I'm hoping that Paul and I can not only create a film that gives people the experience of the club, but makes them think about these more universal issues, because I think, you know, the club attracted all kinds of people, not just the LGBT community. It was predominantly LGBT, but I think it took a step further. It stepped outside the boxes within the LGBT community, whether it be leather, drag, you know, WeHo. All those labels were left at the front door, and people from all those different subcultures, you know, descended on this club along with their straight friends, their mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters. People brought their families, and they all got to swim in this beautiful experience that, you know, that allowed you to lower your inhibitions and, you know, be friendly and funny and open. So I would love to see things like that happen everywhere, because I think it would make so many people happy.
Well, you know, the slogan for my show and sort of the editorial purpose is connecting the circuitry of humanity. And it seems to me that that really happened at Drag Strip 66.
I believe it did.
Yeah, I just want to add too, people touched on it, is that we had many straight people that loved the club too, and we always welcomed them too. Yes, it was more like, yes, we are a gay club. Know that coming into it, that, you know, it's going to be about 90% or 80% gay people. But if you're cool, we're cool. And we sort of had an experience like, we don't care what zip code you're from, as long as when you arrive, you know what the drag strip zip code is. And the drag strip zip code is everyone jumps in, everyone's equal, everyone participates, and everyone has fun. It sounds very simple, and you'd think that it would be how every club is, but especially when we started, you know, even in the gay community, like lesbians did not go to bars where gay men were, and gay men didn't really want lesbians there. And I, you know, I remember that it was very separate. We had tons of lesbians that loved it, because they felt just welcome. So, and again, you can't really plan for that to happen. It either is or it isn't. And I think that energy that was put forth by everybody in the room when you walked in was infectious, and it didn't matter what your genitals were or who you slept with. All that mattered was when you were there, you know, be in the moment and add to the energy. And people did, and God bless them for it. And Nicholas, I'm going to add something, because I think, you know, I know the great work that you do with Desiree's project and what you did in L.A. when you still lived here. This is something that we're addressing in the film, too. It's not something that we were completely conscious of while it was happening. Looking back, we understand it better. But so we started in 1993. And, you know, by 96 and 97 is when the protease cocktails, you know, started to come out to really help people living with HIV. And it turned people who felt that they were going to be dead in a year, they found out they were not going to die. And so I think we just provided this place where people could celebrate life, and people could, you know, part of what we explain is that here we were the week that Bill Clinton got in after 12 years of right-wing politics of friends. And I think it was when the tide turned a little bit, it was kind of a giant exhale. And I think it was just something everybody needed to exhale over, in that, you know, maybe with this new president, maybe the pendulum will swing back in our favor, and we will get AIDS drugs, we'll get recognized as a community. And so, going back to what I said, I just think Dragstrip happened at a moment when, especially for the gay community, they needed a place where they could live again and live it up. And we provided it for them.
Well, you know, something that comes up for me is that I didn't become HIV positive in 2007 because of a rare slip in my safer sex behavior. So I, even though I'm living with HIV, I that happened to me during the time of modern medication. And I never had to go through that fear of my own mortality related to HIV and AIDS. Although at that time in history, I was losing people that I loved, as we all were and had been. But I do know for right. a fact, based upon who was in my life at the time, that many people that started going to Dragstrip 66 at the beginning were aware of their HIV status and had shared it with each other. And there was a group of really close HIV positive friends that would go there. And that same group continued to go there after the advances in the medication. So it became, instead of a last hurrah, it became sort of the first hurrah of whatever might reveal itself.
Right. Yeah. Well, even you know, knock on wood, I'm HIV negative, but it doesn't. It still affects me so profoundly that I've lost so many friends, and that we all have. You know, in our age group, you know, 45 to 55, roughly. We all lost people. So even if you weren't living with it yourself, you really were. You were living with friends and with people around you that you might lose. And that's just a dark feeling. It's a dark energy. So with the changeover in the drugs, it kind of lifted that cloud over everybody's attitude about living and about how to proceed, I guess you could say.
I think they did, you know, assemble and dance and party with a new intensity, I guess. And again, we're just reflecting on this now. As we were experiencing it, we didn't think about it. But I think that was an element that, you know, added extra fire to what to what was going on.
Certainly. Well, congratulations to both of you. I'm really happy to help shine a light on what you're doing. And hopefully the Huffington Post will pick this episode up. I don't control that process, but I hope that happens. I'd love a closing remark from each of you. Let's start with you, Paul.
I just want to impart to anybody that's listening or who knows that we're doing this movie is, even though I co-created the club and I was the DJ and I'm making money, and I'll certainly be in it, obviously, because I'm part of it. The movie isn't even really going to be about me, or it's not even really going to be about Mr. Dan. It's really going to be about all these people that made this club what it was. Because we could have the greatest for a club and try to do it. And if people don't add to it or attend it, it doesn't matter how great the idea is. It takes the people to turn a little kernel of an idea into a giant tree, turns the acorn into a tree. And so really this, we really want to impart to people, people that did get to go and people that didn't, is that the patrons are the essence of why we really want to make this film. We want to showcase these incredible people that made this happen and who supported us. We had people that came on the opening night, who came to the 20th anniversary, and they just came a month ago when we did a little reunion party. These people are still attached to this club. So it's not just like, oh yeah, that was kind of fun for a while, but people really keep Dragstrip 66 in their heart. It's something that connects them. It connects them to their friends. So that's part of the story we really want to share, is all these great people that made the club so wonderful.
I love that. Phil?
Yeah, I guess I can only echo what Paul just said, and that is that, you know, as we're conducting our interviews and as we're looking at the archival material, the theme that keeps coming up is the incredible power of community. And before I started on this project, I just thought community was an overused term that was a blanket word that people used when they were lazy. But I'm really seeing how powerful people can be when they decide to assemble and do something. And now we're talking about something that may appear to be as frivolous as getting together and dance and have a good time. But, you know, what we didn't mention was the night that the cops raided the place and Mr. Dan and the patrons took a stand in the parking lot and refused to leave. So, again, this was something that erupted, in answer to what definitely was, aggressive action on the part of the police. So, and I think that kind of shared experience really galvanized people. And once that happens, and you feel part of something larger, there's almost nothing you can't do if you decide to do it together. So again, I think, Dragstrip was, part of a larger story. And I think in its way, it's, one step forward, towards helping people connect and understand each other and accept each other and support each other.
Well, I really appreciate that you taking the time to be on the show. Paul has a link that he can start sharing on social networking. Wait till about 10 minutes after the show ends, Paul, so it has a chance to buffer, because there'll be nothing there at the link if you don't. I wanted to let you know I'm taking the 7-year archive of my TV show and my photography as a journalist and additional new interviews, and I'm developing this now. I'm going to be creating a feature-length documentary called Hollywood Snowstorm, The Adventures of a Promo Homo.
Oh, can I just tell you something? Can I tell you something, Nicholas?
Please do.
I self-dubbed myself, and this is probably about 16 years ago, a promosexual, because I was in the music biz as a promotion person. I've always been the promoter as a DJ of all events that I do. I'm the press release guy. So I'm right there with you. I just want to add, you know, just one little closing thought about what Phil just said. You know, if people want to look at Dragstrip 66 as sort of the Bernie Sanders of the 90s, that's a good analogy.
Yeah.
I like that. That works. So maybe you'll have 25,000 people show up for your premiere.
We would like
that. That would be great.
We do think a larger audience will connect with this because of the deeper themes. And I think, you know, I'm proud that we would be the Bernie Sanders, because I think we've got truth to share. And, you know, I think if we tell this story, the world will listen.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you guys for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Nicholas. It was a pleasure.
Yes, thank you, Nicholas. Really great.
My pleasure. My pleasure having you. So I want to just tell our listeners again, it's really easy to find the Dragstrip 66, the Frockumentary on Facebook. Just type in Dragstrip with a blank space and the numbers 66. And as we mentioned, the website is DS66, or you can type out the word Dragstrip, but DS66, thefrockumentary.com. Frockumentary.com. And I want to just share some more of those theme nights. Biker Chicks in Tranny Town, Dragula, Psycho Nurse Asylum, Ab Fab Christmas, you name it. Jocks and Frocks, you name it, it's there. You know, we've talked about basically the 90s, and of course, Dragstrip 66 went on for 20 years. On April 25th of 1998, I debuted a song in a live performance at the Cinegrill called Stonewalls, and I recently resurrected a recording of it as part of the preparation for my own documentary. So I'm just going to conclude this episode with my live song, Stonewalls, as recorded at the Cinegrill in Hollywood, California, at the Hollywood Roosevelt on April 25th, 1998. And I want to thank Paul and Phil again for being on the show, and I'll see you all next time.
Years throughout every season, we've been fighting together every day and night. Cause for prejudice, there is no rhyme, no reason. Come all you people, shine your lights. For the planet is in darkness, and we've got to save it from the Pharisees' assaults upon our lives. Our freedom is at hand, and it's time to claim it. Please live your life, don't compromise. Look, you'll see.
stone walls coming down, we shall be free. Stone walls coming down as we rise up. Stone walls coming down.
In fact, connecting the circuitry of humanity. All of us connected. Please continue to connect with Nicholas Snow on Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, Instagram, Google Plus, and other social networks. Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. This program is produced and copyrighted by Nicholas Snow Productions, LLC. Thank you for being a part of the snowstorm. We are honored by your presence.